The Feed.
Hello, welcome to episode 82 of The Feed, the official Libsyn podcast, the podcast that takes it beyond how to podcast into keeping you podcasting with podcasting tips and information for the everyday podcaster and taking you inside Libsyn, the largest podcast host and distribution network since 2004. Hi, my name is Elsie Escobar and I am the Libsyn community manager, otherwise known as the podcaster happiness expert. So I chat with you guys via the Libsyn social media channels all over the place and do my best to help you guys out in as many different ways as I can. Do connect with us via social media. We're going to be doing some really fun stuff towards the end of the year here to kind of finish out strong and finish out happy with community stuff. So it would be really sucky if you guys missed it. And, you know, say hi. You can follow Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. That's at Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N, on almost all social media. You can find us by searching that. And if you want to follow me personally, you can find me with the handle Yogeek, which is Y-O-G-E-E-K. In today's episode, get ready for podcasting, iMessage stickers, losing your RSS feed, new apps and services in the podcasting space, dun dun dun, and is racially charged content explicit? We really dive into that one, and iTunes SEO tips, and of course, oh my gosh, everybody's favorite, stats, stats, tats. So let's get started with the show. And here is our first promo of the episode, the Man Whore Podcast.
Most people avoid their exes at all costs. I podcast with them. Yup, I'm Billy Persida, host of the Man Whore Podcast, a sex-positive quest for love. For over 2 years, I've been talking to the women from my sexual past about sex, dating, sexuality, gender, and love. I've also had on sex educators, porn stars, sex workers, queer performers, and other comedians. If you dig all that type of stuff, go listen to the Man Whore Podcast on, well, you know the places, all right? Plus, I'm also on Spotify. Stay slutty.
Did you all know we have a blog? You can find it over at blog.libsyn.com. We've got some great articles over there. Consider subscribing via your favorite RSS reader. My fave as of late is Feedly. I've really taken into liking it a lot. It took me a little bit there to actually use Feedly proper, but I've kind of been digging it as of late. Do share with me some of your favorite feed readers because I'm always looking for new ones and with better functionality and whatnot and ease of consumption. I usually add 3 promos per episode for every one of these episodes on the feed, but I had a special request from the following podcaster, and well, I had to say yes. So here's a short bonus promo because it's all about Halloween, and as you know, Halloween is coming up. So let's hear it from Bitchin' Boutique.
Hello, Libsyn listeners.
I'm Pitney.
And I'm Amelia.
And we'd like to invite you to
It's our Halloween special, full of facts, folklore, frou-frou, and fun. Airing Friday, October 28th. Come by the Bitchin' Boutique. That's bitchinb.libsyn.com.
There are a lot of you guys that are relatively new to the feed, to kind of listening to us, possibly even just in the past year or a few episodes or so. So you might not be aware of this, but in case you're interested, in our first year, in 2013, I was all creative and all trying and testing out new things because, you know, it was our first year out. And I decided to put out a spooktacular Halloween episode that year. And that's kind of what I called it. My alter ego hosted the show. She's been in hiding ever since. But in case you want to get to know her and you want to go back and check out that special episode, I'll put a link in the show notes and you guys can click through that. But the other thing that you can do is actually you could just scroll through the feed, all the way to October 2013. I don't remember exactly. It didn't really have a number. The episode didn't have a number. It was just the Halloween special episode. So you guys can check that out. Podcasters sent in all kinds of spooky stories. So you guys can have a little bit of fun there during Halloween. Okay, enough of that. Here is our scheduled second promo of the episode, The Blood Drawn Chronicles.
The Blood Drawn Chronicles follows the story of a stranger from another world named Myrick and his personal encounters with humans and the creatures of this world known as the vampires. This series is an entire first-hand account taken from Myrick's own personal manuscripts. The story is written in the complete point of view of our main protagonist, who is voiced by the great talent that is Nelson Ventura. We hope you enjoy immersing yourself in this story as much as we enjoyed making it for you.
In case you are interested in being featured on the feed as well as our blog, all you have to do is to email thefeed@libsyn.com. That's it. Thefeed@libsyn.com. Email and say, I want to be a Rockin' Libsyn podcast, and I will send you all of the information to get featured on the blog. And maybe even on the show, because you do have an option for that as well, but it really is all up to you. If you want your promo featured on the show, like the ones that you've heard already, again, you email the same place, thefeed@libsyn.com, and send in your 30-second or less clean promo. That is all. No other stipulations, really. So as I get them, I'll add them into the schedule. So I will be looking forward to getting yours. Now, please don't get on me. There are times when I let things slide, like, you know, we had four promos featured in this show. And this last promo that we're going to hear isn't 30 seconds, but bear with me. Sometimes I just do it because I can, because it's my podcast. Anyway, let's get started with our main chunk of content. My conversation with Rob Walsh, the VP of Podcaster Relations at Libsyn, right after this lovely promo. Seriously, it won me over, to be completely honest. It's right up a mama's alley, really. So this is The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian.
Hi everyone, my name is Jonathan Messenger, and my show is The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian. It's a science fiction podcast for kids. I like to think of it as Scooby-Doo in space. And it stars Finn Caspian.
And lots of robots.
Right. Okay, this here is my intro bot.
Bebop is my name.
Yeah, his name's Bebop. He was actually named Bebop by our listeners. The kids call in, they give us lots of ideas, they tell us alien jokes, and we play those clips on the show, and it's a lot of fun. But hey, can I continue now, Bebop?
By all means.
All right, so the show stars Finn Caspian and his three friends, who all live aboard the famous Marlow 280 Interplanetary Exploratory Space Station. And their job is to go out and explore alien planets looking for one where humans could one day live. And they help the aliens live on those planets with their various problems.
Except that there's a dark secret and a mystery that they must solve.
Wait, Bebop. You're giving away a little too much there.
Sorry. Spoiler alert.
It's all right, bud. So that's the show, The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian, a serialized sci-fi podcast that's roughly for ages 5 to 10. It's a lot of fun, and I guarantee parents will like listening too, so thanks so much, Libsyn.
Libsyn? Who is Libsyn?
Oh, that's the company. That's who we're doing this promo for.
I thought Libsyn sounded sort of like a robot name, and I was going to ask you to introduce me, since all you ever do is keep me here in this studio and you make me talk to the microphone.
Once again, that's The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian. Thanks so much, Elsie and Rob.
Maybe go out for drinks, see a movie, maybe iRobot, I don't know, and, you know, who knows.
Hello, Rob.
Good generic time of the day, Elsie.
Hi, what's going on with you?
Well, you want to talk about stickers.
Yes, I do.
So tell me, okay, because I'm Mr. Fuddy Duddy, Stick in the Mud, yeah. Something's new, and I don't want to see it. Uh-huh. You're Mrs. Hey, something's new, I want to try this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, So explain stickers and why we should use these.
Okay, so when we're talking about stickers, we're talking about the new functionality in iOS 10. Okay, so let's get kind of narrow. Yes. So yes. These would be stickers. Now, so there's a functionality now, or at least, you know, Apple has made it easier now for you to create stickers yourself. So you don't have to even have a dev account, which is kind of cool about the whole thing. And these would be the stickers that would be used in iMessage if you have an iPhone. I'm not sure if you guys have updated to iOS 10, but now there's an app store within iMessage. And within iMessage, you can download all kinds of different apps that range from something like PayPal or Cash, which is some that I have there. You can have Castro actually has an app as well, Castro 2, which is cool. So you can very easily send a podcast to somebody. Really neat. But there's tons of stickers. So just fun things to send your friends when you're texting back and forth. And there's been some innovation in this space, I think, at least in the podcasting space, because I never thought like, oh, stickers, podcasters. You know, that's just not, doesn't make sense. But some of my favorite podcasts come from Relay FM. I'm a Relay.fm. I'm a big fan of their network. And I've been listening to Mike Hurley, who is like one of the co-founders of the network. And he created a sticker package for Relay.
And they host with us. So thank you guys.
Yeah. And so they have a sticker package and it's really, really neat. And what they've done is now they actually offer this package. It's free. And each of their shows has a sticker that represents their show. And it's kind of based on their content. So it's not like their artwork. It's something fun, like the Pen Addict podcast is one of my favorites. And so there's a pen and there's a line that's like,
and there's an apple and there's an apple pen and there's a pineapple and there's a pen.
Ooh, those are
pineapple
all,
pen. No, sorry.
Well, because a lot of that stuff is inside.
Somebody
jokes.
Got that joke.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is,
pen, pineapple, apple pen. Go look it up on YouTube. You will hate me for the rest of the day.
Well, but there's a lot of inside jokes. You know, people are really, you know, as we all know, like everybody that calls to the show says, you know, good generic time of the day. That's like what they say to us. So we might have a sticker for the feed that would say good generic time of the day. And of course, that would be kind of quirky for somebody that's not a fan. But for our fans, it would go, they totally would get it. So a lot of the stickers for Relay FM are inside jokes, but they're also they're above that at the same time. So I think they're fun. And actually the Incorporable network as well has some stickers. Again, same thing where they are sort of insider type jokes, people who really love their content.
Can the sticker be animated like a GIF where it's flashing?
Yes, some of them are. So go ahead.
So if someone made a 12 that's flashing, that would kind of be a generic time of the day.
Yeah.
A flashing 12.
That's awesome. Oh my God. Yes, it would be a generic time of the day. Totally. But there's a lot of stuff like that I think is really fun. And anyway, so I emailed Rob about this. I'm like, I think we should have this as part of our stuff. Have like a generic podcasting type stickers where it would be like, I don't know, like hashtag podcaster for us, right? Mm-hmm. And some fun things. And also for inside of the Relay FM stickers, they also have a mini sticker cartoon of each of the hosts. And I think that's fun too.
If anyone out there that's listening has already done stickers, let us know what your stickers are for your podcast.
That would be cool. Send us a link or something like that, because I think it would be fun. And just to add a little bit more to the experience, and that's it. It's just fun. I keep telling Jessica, we have to have some of these, because I am hell-bent on creating stickers. For
and I'm like, yeah, you kids with your newfangled stickers, get off my lawn.
So anyway, I just thought it would be really fun. Oh, and then the neat approach that Relay FM is having too is that they have I haven't downloaded it yet, but I do believe they have a network app that they've created themselves for iOS for Relay FM. And what they do is whoever downloads their generic iOS app, not generic, but what I'm saying is their iOS app, it comes with the stickers. So that's like a really
Maybe we need to get with Michael and see if we can get stickers added.
Yeah. And so that's cool because I believe that that's what happened with Castro. I may be wrong, but when I downloaded Castro 2, I think that it, like, I didn't go to the App Store to download the app for for iMessage for Castro 2. It was just in iMessage. So I'm not sure how that works, but I think that's kind of fun. All of a sudden you get bonus. So,
all right.
So there's that. Yeah. So that's it. And so if you guys have stickers, do send them over and we would love your thoughts about that. Now, we're going to be talking about some things that happen when you lose 11 years worth of your audience and how scary that can be. So, from happy things to serious things.
Yes. And this is from Jason Van Orden. And for those of you who don't know Jason, I hope you know who he is. But Jason's been around in podcasting, one of the early experts in podcasting, and he had a Feedburner feed that was / IBM, and
Internet Business Mastery, by the way, is why
right, and that's what IBM stands for. And he let that lapse, and in Google and Feedburner, and guess what? There's another company by the same initial that kind of grabbed it. Anyway, do you want to read this?
This is what Jason wrote inside of actually the podcast community over on Facebook. So this is what
he also emailed us too.
Yes, he did. He totally emailed us. Yes, it says, "Does anyone have a contact related to Feedburner? I urgently need to talk to someone there. Someone recently set up a feed on Feedburner that is the same as our feed address, one that we've had for 11 years, but with capital letters. For example, ours was feeds.feedburner.com XYZ. This new one is feeds.feedburner.com capital XYZ. Apparently, the Feedburner URL handling is crap because this new feed now takes priority over ours, and so our show feed no longer is accessible. iTunes has stopped updating. We could lose 11 years of subscribers. I didn't even realize that iTunes had switched our feed to the Feedburner feed in their directory. The one I had submitted years ago was a URL that we owned. Any help is appreciated." So he actually clears up some things at the end here, that so we clarify exactly what happened to his feed. But what do you think about that, Rob?
Well, again, it wasn't a case where it was capital XYZ versus XYZ. So feed, you can't go and hijack somebody's feed that way. But it sure, we thought it was that case early on, and we were going to do some testing. And it wound up being that he lapsed on his registration, and
what was interesting about that is that he said that, quote, "Our Feedburner account was attached to a company email created with Google Apps for Business. Recently, we did some retooling of the email address accounts we have. Well, it turns out that the address that was with the login for our Feedburner account was deleted. Hence, the address was freed up. By coincidence, someone from IBM registered the Feedburner URL, at least one similar with a capital letter, claiming it for a new feed. To me, it appeared that someone was allowed to co-opt our feed through a URL glitch, but that is not the case after all. So to be clear, there is not a bug in the URL handling. It is indeed not case sensitive. Now I'm waiting to see if they will restore that URL to us again. Fingers crossed," unquote.
And you know, I just want to say, this is something that won't happen with Libsyn, because when you register a show slug with Libsyn and your feed is showslug.libsyn.com/RSS, or the example I always use is, let's just say you are a Boy Scout and you had a podcast and you wanted to call it Ropecast and you wanted to talk about tying knots. Sounds reasonable. And you register ropecast.libsyn.com/RSS, and then you get through and you become an Eagle Scout and you graduate high school and you go off to college and you let the podcast lapse and it goes away. And then somebody who's into bondage comes along and they register Ropecast and have a completely different show. All those people that were subscribed to the Ropecast feed would now get the new Ropecast show. And that would be quite different and shocking.
And shocking.
And they would learn how to tie some new knots that they had never thought about before. And some parents might not appreciate that.
No.
So what we do at Lipson is when you register a show slug, that's your show slug for life. If you register Ropecast, that is yours. So matter of fact, it's actually the opposite in this case. Ropecast is actually a bondage podcast. So if they ever gave up on their podcast, somewhere along the line, a Boy Scout cannot come in and create a really boring podcast for those people that are into the bondage from their perspective. So they're not going to get annoyed. But the long of the short is this. When a show slug is registered by you, that's yours for life. Even if you close your account, no one else is ever going to be able to come in and register it. That's why no one's ever lost their audience that's hosted with Libsyn forever. You actually do own that URL with Libsyn. So despite what some people may say about owning your stuff, you actually do with Libsyn own it. And on top of that, if you ever wanted to, you can just bring in your custom domain. But the point is here, is what's even worse, is FeedBurner and getting a hold of somebody at FeedBurner.
It's really
the fact
hard.
That the fact that Jason was actually able to get a hold of somebody was, I think, the most shocking thing because that is really difficult. There is no customer service with FeedBurner. I can't say this enough. Don't use FeedBurner. Use FeedBurner. If you're using FeedBurner, get out of it now. Put in their email me, rob@libsyn.com. I will send you a tutorial on how to get out of FeedBurner. Do not use it. There's no customer service. Jason got very lucky. And he's been around and he's influential and he has connections, but he got somebody. But there is no customer service that you can just easily contact and they'll get back to you.
Yeah. And let me read the last update from Jason so that you guys see how it was resolved here. But there's a lesson that he learned from here as well. And he says, quote, reporting back to let you all know that we got the FeedBurner feed back in our control and everything is back to normal on iTunes. Thankfully, we were given the email of the person who claimed the URL, which was that in itself, though. Come on. That's how did that's like a lot of work. I have a feeling that he, you know, just doing that would have taken forever after it was freed up by our account being deleted in FeedBurner. He was kind enough to change his FeedBurner feed to something else. Then I was able to reburn my feed again using our original feed address in FeedBurner. Within 24 hours, iTunes updates everything back to normal. Of course, over coming days and weeks, I'm going to have our team migrate us away from FeedBurner like I thought we had a few years ago so that we are 100% in control of our feed through our own website. Thanks to everyone who sent ideas my way or even just positive thoughts, we dodged a bullet. Moral of the story. Control your channels and maybe do an audit on everything at least once a year to make sure it's all set up how you think it is and that there aren't any problems in waiting to happen, unquote. And, you know, go ahead.
He got very lucky.
Yes, he did.
Let's say the person that had gotten a hold of that IBM one had spent 6 months promoting IBM feed, had it out and submitted in all the different places, not knowing that it was previously used, had built an audience around it. Would you want to give it up to somebody because they neglected it and they made a mistake? Would you give up your show after 6 months of promoting that feed because somebody made a mistake and was negligent? I wouldn't.
Yeah,
he got lucky.
Yeah, and the fortunate aspect is that it was like sort of just there, you know, like it's like, you know, you going over to a new social media account and just getting your username and not really publishing anything on it, squatting, basically. I don't think they were squatting, if you will. I think there were possibilities. You know, something was going to happen.
Oh, no. So this is completely innocent on the part of the next group that registered it. But the point is, FeedBurner should never allow a previously used slug to be used again. I mean, that's why we don't, because we understand the implications of allowing a slug to be used again, which is why when you host with us, we're a paid service. You are owning that channel. You are owning that feed. That's why the NFL Network switched all their feeds from FeedBurner to Libsyn feeds. And that's why HBO uses a Libsyn feed and why Consumer Reports uses a Libsyn feed, because they know they own their channel. So.
And then the thing is, too, with that, what Jason mentioned about making sure that you kind of take an audit of your stuff. I do believe, I think I've said that. I think I said that in my social media marketing thing. But I think the audit for that is for you to look back at what you've done so that you can clean it up and make it better. With this kind of stuff is the same thing. Cause even though, you know, we obviously, you guys won't have that type of problem with these feeds, but you guys could have the trouble of you decide you are now moving to a new email address and then close out your email address that you had before. And you forgot that that was what you used to do to sign into Libsyn or any other place. So make sure you know what your sign-ins and what email address you're using and what it's attached to and how you have access to it and all that stuff. Because people have also had that problem with iTunes Connect and accounts that have to do with things like that because they're based on email addresses. So do make sure that you have that, you know, clear for yourself.
And the other message again on this is don't use FeedBurner.
Yeah, don't use FeedBurner.
I had someone the other day in one of the boards I'm in go, well, Gimlet uses FeedBurner. I'm like, did you not listen to the first season of Startup where they were telling you they don't know what the heck they're doing? You know, that was their ongoing joke where they were saying, you know, they were working their way through some of this stuff. Just because Gimlet is doing something doesn't mean it's right. Matter of fact, they did a lot of things wrong. I mean, there was some of us that are in the know. We listened to some of those early Startup episodes and we're like just rolling our eyes and laughing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they make good content, but they don't technically know what the heck they're doing a lot of the times.
Yeah, no, yeah. So please don't use FeedBurner, especially now. And if you're hell bent on doing something different, do your research and at least, you know, invest in something that is current and up to date. If you don't want to listen to our advice, which I think you should, just use something that's current and up to date and it's updated for 2016.
Right. And if you don't want to use, you don't want to use the Libsyn feed and you want to use a third party feed like FeedBurner, go use Feeder. It's a paid service. At least you have some more control there and you have customer service.
Yeah, totally. So there you have it. Anyway, so we're going to get to something really exciting as well, something that's going to make Rob really happy because it seems like it made him really happy. So I sent him an article just yesterday. I think it was something like the title of the article was "This app is going to be or wants to be the SoundCloud of podcasts." Is that what it's? Yeah, that's what it was. And that's actually what drew me. And I was like, that sounds kind of weird. But whatever, you know, so I clicked through and I quickly scanned and I read about this new app called Bumpers, right?
So, yes. So I thought it was going to be an article about how this was going to be a company that would never make any money, would burn through lots of cash.
Oh, touche.
Or it was going to be an article about an app where you go in and you completely give up all control to your branding and you help promote their service. And you know what? It's actually the latter. It is that latter one. Yeah.
Yeah. So this app, when I first read it, I thought like, it was interesting because it said that you can create podcasts within the app. And I thought, that's cool. And it's got some really neat functionality. And by that, I mean, you can record into the app, which is not new. There's a lot of different actual
apps. There's a lot of them out there that do it.
That do that, yeah. What was interesting that I thought about this in the recording aspect of it is that it optimized for end of sentences, I believe, and it suggested great places to put in your music and transitions and segments and stuff. And I thought, that's cool.
It defines pregnant pauses. Right.
Yeah. So it kind of does all kinds of things like that. So it will help your podcast production be better. And I thought, that's cool. But then as I started reading a little bit more about it, it said that and I know that you love this, I'm sure. They are solving the discovery problem by keeping everything in the app. So the way that they're solving this discovery problem within the podcasting industry of people not finding your podcast is to keep it out of the largest of iTunes, right? Which is at this point, I think we're going to get to some data here, Rob, and you're going to blow our minds with the average worth of listenership that's coming from the Apple ecosystem, which I understand why you would want to break from. I get that. But not to not allow you to be part of it because there is no RSS feed. Am I correct?
Right. I mean, for them to say it is a podcast is so disingenuous. There is no RSS feed and there's no putting your podcast in iTunes. By the way, that's two strikes to keep it from being a podcast. I mean, if you're not in iTunes and you don't have an RSS feed, you're not a podcast. I mean, to be a podcast, you have to have an RSS feed and you have to be in iTunes. That's my definition of a podcast. You know, some people don't like that, but that's what it is. Deal with it. Because if you're not in iTunes, then you're not an Overcast and you're not an Instacast and you're not in Shifty Jelly Pocket Cast. So you have to be in iTunes and you have to have, and the only way to get into iTunes, you have to have an RSS feed. So if you don't have those two things, if you're not, you don't meet those two criterias, you're not a podcast. And strike one, strike two, boom. As a matter of fact, either strike is enough to get you gone. So yeah, it's not. And by the way, it's also a pain to edit. And the audio quality off the iPhone was horrendous. It was clicks and it's just bad. It's just bad recording. Their quality of the recording is horrendous. I listened to some other people's just to see if it was something with my app, my phone, which was the new iPhone 7 Plus. No, it was not. Other ones I listened to that were created were horrible. The app has a long, long, long way to go. And I will say this, it's dead man walking and will close down long before it gets to be usable. Just my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that it would just require you to be discovered via the app. So in essence, if you do want to be discovered and you have something to say within your podcast, the majority of the marketing techniques or promotional techniques that you would come to me to give you would be completely different. There's a lot of things that you wouldn't be able to do. Go ahead.
I would say they claim there's a discoverability issue. You know, everyone knows my opinion on that. They don't even solve that problem. They solve that problem by putting you in a walled garden that's really tiny. So
yeah, it's true.
Like, We want to feed the world with this 1 by 1 inch square garden we've built.
Just in this little corner of the world. Yes. And I think what's interesting is that, well, that's how iTunes essentially began, right? That's how we all discovered each other. That's why people like me are getting these insane download numbers by not publishing for 3 years, because I happen to get into the garden way early. So that's not solving a problem here. I'm sorry, guys. If you guys need some advice, you can reach out to us, you know. We'll help you. We'll help you. Starting with some RSS feeds would be awesome. Even just the RSS feeds, because that will empower your users to choose. You can put it in iTunes if you want or not, right? They can have their choice.
And this looks to be an anchored walled garden, meaning that you're not going to be able to get your content out easily or at all if you ever wanted to leave.
You know what? I hadn't thought about that. You're right. Maybe that's to be able to like easily export or something.
There's no RSS feed. How do you pull your content out?
That's tough. I had that problem with, I do believe I have that issue with SoundCloud, because I used to do these really cool short audio bits that I would use on my SoundCloud account that were all based on my home life with my girls. And so it was really short snippets, like 1 to 2 minutes of something that was happening at the moment. It was sort of like my way of capturing that time. Obviously, it was a very personal. It's not like I want to promote this or anything, but I have a free SoundCloud account. And of course, I came to a point where I went into my limit. So now if I post anything in SoundCloud, the other parts go away. And I actually haven't done the research to know how to get those recordings out. And those are meaningful to me. I'm like, can I get those out? How do I get those out? So now I'm screwed, but they're really cute. And it's awesome to hear my girls when they were babies. But I have a problem with that now. So moving on to another article here about another tool.
Yeah, well, you're just trying to get my blood pressure up this week, weren't you?
I know. I'm sorry. But this was neat. I mean, it was cool. And then we did you did a little bit more research than I did. I was just like, shiny colors. Yay. Okay. So I sent an email to Rob about This American Life just came out with a new tool. that they're calling Shortcut. And it is a tool basically meant to empower their users to share their content on social media. So here's that. I will have a link in the show notes from a Wired article. But you have some thoughts about this, Rob.
So yeah. So when you first sent that to me, immediately I said, you know, hey, I'm out at a conference right now, and I said, what's the difference about this versus Clamor? Or, you know, which was doing short clips way before WNYC or now TAL. And then I watched the video in which Ira Glass asked, why did someone not develop this? So we did. Well, Clamor did. And This American Life and the WNYC people live in a New York City procaster bubble where they refuse to open their eyes to see what is already out there, or when presented with it, which was in this case, reinvent it and claim to invent it for the first time. Watching the video with Ira made me throw up a little. It was that disingenuous. I was like, wow, maybe he's clueless about how bad it is in the situation, but they didn't invent anything here. They called it a hackathon where they came up with it. I called it a clone-a-thon. Anyway, I asked Parviz, the founder of Clamor, what is different? Which, yes, he might be biased on his answer, but Parviz is actually a really straight shooter. And again, he has been doing this way before WNYC or This American Life, quote, invented it, unquote. Do you want to read Parviz's comments
here?
Sure.
Yeah. So he said, hi, Rob, hope all is well. A few thoughts here. Number one, it basically does the same thing we do. Lets users select audio clip and converts to video so that it shows up in native format on Facebook and Twitter. We give users the option of sharing a link. But if they share from our site/app, we convert to a video and post that .mp3 file. MP4 file. Number two, unlike Clamor, it's not a service with an API. They created some code for the clipping that they host on their own servers and use for their own show. At some point in the future, they may make that code available for others to host on their own servers. Same deal with WNYC. By contrast, we provide a service that can be plugged into any existing app/player/site, which you know well from integrated into the Libsyn player. Our WordPress sharing plugin alone has had...
Approximately
10,000 downloads by podcasters placing us on their websites. Number three, on the creation side, they give the user the option of highlighting part of the transcript and having that become the clip. That makes things easier than selecting start/stop times on an audio wave. The problem is that the alignment between transcript/audio is not great. So user still has to listen to their selection, and it gets confusing to make fine-tuned adjustments when the audio doesn't match up with what you've highlighted. It's also not a practical solution since This American Life is a well-resourced outfit that has perfect transcripts, while most others would likely rely on inaccurate machine transcripts at best. Number four, on the output side, their clips show up as a solid color square, can choose between four different colors, with the words from the transcript scrolling inside. I think it looks pretty, but I prefer some of the choices we made on output design because they have a greater impact for podcasters. We show the cover art image by default, and user has the option to replace with another image or animated GIF. We let users put whatever text they want rather than pushing the transcript text. Again, relying on the transcript text is not practical. The CBS radio team has been using Clamor for a while. They shared their social media metrics with us, and we analyzed to learn that when they mash up the audio with GIFs, it gets 16 times lift in engagement versus non-Clamor posts, side by side of Shortcut versus Clamor formats below. Their tool is web-based and does not even seem to be mobile responsive, much less available for integration in apps. Also, in addition to the 10,000 downloads of our plugin, screenshot below, a couple of other things I'll flag on how we're making sharing accessible to all podcasters. We've set up a webpage where folks can look up podcasts in iTunes directory to share clips. and for no need to load an MP3 file or get an MP3 link or use our app. We are in beta with our auto-generated landing pages for all podcasts and iTunes directory, where we'll display any Clamor clips that have been made for them. It's a nice way for podcasters and fans to see what clips people are posting. Can search landing pages here. As an example, here's a landing page for the feed. So we have a clip here, and I'll put that Clamor landing page in the show notes, guys, so that you could see it. Where you can see the 29 Clamor clips listeners have posted from the past episodes. The beta is not perfect. We don't catch 100% of the clips created. Best parvis. P.S. Since transcription came up in this discussion, some services that might be interesting to check out if you ever consider options for integration into the Libsyn platform. Trint, their tool links transcript text with video. VoiceBase, maybe Alphonic if their current beta works out. There's also an interesting company called DeepGram that is focused on tagging searching audio rather than simple transcripts. That said, if Libsyn did offer transcription, could just plug directly into Google API or give people a choice between APIs rather than going through an intermediary who at the end of the day is probably just going to use Google anyway.
Well, thanks, Parviz. And by the way, on the transcript side of here, Trint, I've been hearing a lot of good things on Trint, and it seems to be pretty accurate. And it's 25 cents a minute, and you get it within a day. To put that in perspective, if you want, you know, you get it right away. So if you wanted to get a day turnaround on really good human transcription, it's going to be about $2.50 a minute, roughly. So it's about 1/10 the cost. And if you want to get it a week for human transcription, that's pretty good. It's about $1 a minute. So either way, 25 cents a minute is much better. And you can actually, if you buy a plan, you can get it down to about 20 cents a minute with Trint. So if you're looking for transcription, I know we've talked about this before. It's T-R-I-N-T, Trint.com, I believe it is. And it's in beta. And I've heard some people saying really good things on it. So you can even do a half hour, I think, trial for that's free. So give it a try. See if it matches up with your voice. And here's the thing. Different transcription services work better with different people, depending on your dialect, accent, colloquialisms. Not all transcription services are going to work great with everyone. I'm sure the transcription services said before, if I talk with my New York, Brooklyn accent, you know, if I grew up on Long Island where everyone was from Brooklyn on my street and we all talk like we were from Brooklyn when I grew up, this is how I talked when I lived on Long Island. And people didn't say to me, you're from New York. They said, you're from New York. You know, and I said, no, I'm from Long Island. That's how I talk growing up. My accent there is quite a bit different now that I live in the Midwest and how I use my voice and how I talk on podcasts. So your colloquialisms, your accents are going to affect different services, but give Trint a try. Now, back to the WNYC thing. And what I'm still trying
and
to figure
TAA,
out.
Because in this American
Yeah,
and
life. TAL. Sorry. Yes, sorry. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. If WNYC invented this in the spring of this year, and This American Life, quote unquote, invented it in a hackathon in 2015. How did someone travel back in time to July 12th, 2013 and create the first of the 29 Clamors for the feed? Or maybe, just maybe, TAL did not invent crap and just took someone else's idea and created a clone of it. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's tough. And also, you know, I think that what's happening with the This American Life and WNYC thing is that as they're larger companies, they want to invest in their own ecosystem, of course, right? They want to make things happen in their ecosystem. They have offered up, it's an open source code. So just to let you guys clarify that, for the most part, I do believe even the shortcut thing is open now as well for you to be able to kind of expand on it or whatever it is that you want to do. The thing is that at this moment, it's an open source. I would say that there's a very small amount of people who are podcasting and developers enough to be able to create something like this on their own. And in fact, I'm part of a Slack group for the WNYC because WNYC has a product like this as well. It's called Audiograms, and it's essentially the same thing. They create a video out of an audio clip, and instead of having the moving words, which was the shortcut does, they have the audio lines go up and down depending upon what you're saying. So it automatically creates that. And the discussion inside of the Slack group is really good. There's a lot of people in there trying to, of course, get their podcast heard and whatnot. The challenge around that is that every single person that's testing audiograms also has somebody that's been able to create this for them on their own website. So essentially, mm-hmm. you have to go, like for us, in order for us to use this, we would have to go into the back end of Libsyn.com, not the dashboard, not where you guys go put your stuff up, but we would have to go inside wherever it is that you are. You go back there, you have added this bit of functionality to your website, and you would have to go in there and create your stuff. So I get it. It could be easy, but at this moment,
yeah, not. It sounded easy.
Yeah, right. Right? Well, I mean, once it's set up, but
I guess what rubbed me wrong on all of – I guess what rubbed me raw or the wrong way on all of this was they put up a video that made it sound like, hey, why didn't someone else do this? So we did it. Someone else did do this. Not only did someone else do that, that's someone else that talked to your team. So
that's disingenuous.
Yeah, the video was – it was either disingenuous or incompetent. But either way it could just be simple NYC procaster arrogance.
It could be. And also, and I mean, I'm not, it could be. And also, you know, Ira Glass may not have gone to the hackathon. Right. Maybe it was like,
oh no,
it's one of those things.
He was just given a script.
Yeah. And he was here, read this. And this is what we did. But then maybe he doesn't have the awareness that there was somebody that was speaking to their team at the hackathon that was from Clamor that was saying, has shared some insight and stuff. So yeah. Anyway, great. Fabulous. Do we have something fun to talk about now?
We have some voice feedback.
We have some feedback. This is a particularly fun. It's a serious subject, but it's, you know, here we go. Okay, let's hear.
G'day, or good generic time of the day, Rob and Elsie. This is Phil from the World War One WWI Digger Stories podcast. I just have a very quick question. My podcast focuses on the diaries and memoirs of First World War soldiers, mainly Australian soldiers at present, but in the future, possibly soldiers from other nationalities. Many of these men use racially charged descriptions and words, such as the N-word. I just released an episode that I put a warning at the front of the episode and an explicit rating on in iTunes. I'm just wondering if this is the best way of dealing with racially charged dialogue. I don't want to change the original manuscripts, as I want to be as true as possible to the original words of the soldiers. Thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you for the voicemail. And per your question, putting an explicit tag is the way to go if you're using any racially charged words that some would find offensive. Like, is bad hombres now one of those words? But if you don't want to label it explicit, you could always bleep out the word. But as you said, you wanted to keep it accurate, but accurate means explicit tag for that episode. And one episode marked explicit means you're out of India podcast store. And I would bet there's a good size potential audience in India, or at least there was for your show. So choice is 100% accuracy and explicit tag and not in India and a few other countries, or bleeping out specific words and being in India. It's purely an artistic decision on your part. It's one you have to make, you know, each podcaster has to make for themselves. You know, do you want to edit and bleep and be someplace, or be authentic, not bleep, label explicit, and then not be in places, because you're going to get knocked out of iTunes in India with one episode labeled explicit.
It would be a little bit hard. Mind you, if those people in India who are already subscribed to your RSS feed, then that's free, so they would still get that. It's just that it wouldn't have the iTunes backing, if you will.
Right. You won't pick up new audience. And that's, it's all about, you know, you want to be someplace where you can pick up new audience.
Right. But it's understandable. And I think that you did a really good assessment of everything, and you've thought it through. Oftentimes, whenever I advise clients as well that are asking about explicit tags like this, it hasn't really ever come out to like the N-word or anything like that. But it's come out based on not explicit conversations, but I guess rated R conversations that are happening, not because of the sexual violent nature, but maybe things like having a discussion about divorce, right? That's an adult conversation that perhaps at times you might not want your kids to listen to, especially if it's like a parenting show or something like that. And I wouldn't necessarily mark the show explicit, but I would definitely create a very important FYI at the beginning of the episode, which immediately let my people say, hey, we are talking about adult conversations in this podcast that are about this, this, and this. If you do not want your children to listen to this conversation, you know, whatever, make whatever choice you want. So it might not necessarily be explicit in the way that we view like profanity and things like that, but the conversation might be a little adult. Although it might not merit an explicit tag, a proper explicit tag. So that's what I think about too.
Right. I mean, I had someone recently for Today on iOS ping me for saying the word porn twice on an episode. And I go, now, yeah. And they're like, now I had, yeah, well, my kid was in the car and I had explained to them what porn was.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well, you know, that's not explicit to say porn. I guess I could say Disney nasty, right? Because there's always somebody by the name of Thumper and Bambi. But, you know, so I don't know.
It's tough. I mean, it's a tough thing to think about, because there are times when I think Jess and I were just talking about, but this is actually happening in regular radio, you know, because we were talking about the same issue as we were sitting in the car, and all of a sudden there was this incredible ad that was really like, it called your attention, a very well done ad, right? With this woman talking and all this stuff while we were in the car, just regular old radio. And it was about penile dysfunction. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, so then the girls are, what is penile dysfunction, you know? And it's like, oh, great. Thank you, wonderful ad that called the attention of my children. You know, but what I'm saying is that, you know, was that explicit? Not really. They were just stating facts, but maybe that's not a conversation the girls and I want to be having right now. Or our family once is ready to have. I just didn't know how to solve that problem. But it's sort of like your porn thing, right? You just said it. It's not explicit. It's just tough.
Well,
that's hard.
Right. And if you watch the World Series,
yeah,
you will see.
I did not. Sorry.
You will see more erectile dysfunction advertisements.
Oh gosh.
Than you've ever seen. And when your child asks, "What's wrong with a 4-hour erection?" you have a lot of explaining to do. All right. We've gone into the gutter. Let's go.
Yes, we have. Let's keep going. So thank you for this question. And, we appreciate that. So here's another one that came in. This one says, hey, the feed folks, I've been running a trivia podcast called Trivia with Buds for 11 weeks now, with one episode up every Tuesday. The format of the show is two friends facing off in trivia challenge with two different topics they're good at. I've gotten a lot of feedback, and the people that listen seem to really dig it. With that being said, I don't really want to change anything up, but if I wanted to have something like three friends going head to head, or post a live show, or do a mini episode where it just would be me giving some trivia to the listener, how soon is too soon to try it? Is it something I should wait for after establishing an audience for like a year, or should I just dive in and try anything new that pops into my head? Thanks for your help. Love your show, Ryan Buds. Great question.
Yes. And thanks, Ryan. This is where having your own app for your show is of great help. If you have your own app for your show through us, you can actually release app-only content. You can then release an episode to the app that you want to try out. So basically, think of your app as your beta trying, you know, proving ground. This allows you to test something new with most of your loyal audience members and get feedback from them. Then if you get a lot of positive feedback, you can then just release those episodes or new ones like it to your feed. This does not work for apps that you have built that pull from your RSS feed. This does work for the Libsyn apps, as the apps for Libsyn are a destination, and you can choose which content goes to the app and make it app-only content, which, again, is a great way to drive people to your app. So you say, hey, I've got this content, and you want to check it out, and it's only available in the app, and that gets people to get the app. And then the app then is on their home screen, and that reminds them about you. And then you get this little – now we have these little red circles with the notification number, and it tells you how many episodes they haven't listened to. So that makes them feel guilty for not listening to your episode when that number goes to 3 and then 4 and then 5 and then 6. and then the app also now comes with the Apple Watch app. So anyway, having your own app is a really great thing, not just from a branding point of view, but now you can also use it as your personal testing ground in a situation like this. Can you try it out on your feed if you don't have the app? Sure. But make sure you solicit lots of feedback, watch it closely. And if the feedback is overwhelmingly negative, yank that down, that episode, right away, because you don't want to really tweak off your audience or potential new audience by putting out this episode that's not up to par for when someone new comes along for the first time to your show. You've done all this work to drive them to your show. They listen to this not regular episode on your feed, and they're like, oh, what is this? So just think about that. But if you do have a Libsyn app, then you are in a perfect position to try out something like this and not alienate the majority of your audience. So there.
Yeah. I love the app idea. I think it's great. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. I have had a client slash friend, start testing this out for herself. Not with the app, not with an app as of yet. But she has started a different type of podcast episode that's going – she has a weekly podcast, and now she has added another podcast. And what she's been really diligently doing is teaching her audience what to expect. So she has created a few, in quotes, commercials about – this is what's going to be coming up on Mondays. So if you're not interested in this content, wait for the Thursday episode. And she's been very, very clear about that. She's sort of like advertising in her own show before she starts this, so that if people start to listen to it, they know that it's the same show they've always been subscribed to. But that's another thing that you can try. She just started. So maybe I'll report back and see how it works out, because it's a divergence of the original content that she's been publishing for the past like 4 years. So there might be a coup. We'll see what happens. But you can test it that way and just start to feel it out and say like, hey, on November, there's going to be 2 extra episodes that are going to be X. Keep an eye out for that. Something like that.
So what you're trying to say is good communication helps
with the transition. Yes. with people who are going to complain primarily. You can say, yes. I've learned that with my girls, I got to tell you. So, so we have, let me see. We have another question here. This one says, hi, Rob. I have a quick question in regards to SEO for iTunes. One of Rob's favorite topics of conversation. I particularly don't know the ins and outs of search engine optimization and hope it all works and how it all works and how you get into it. My question revolves around searching for podcasts on all of the different podcatching apps and how the content provider can be seen in these searches. My podcast is called The Beardcaster and is all about beards, mustaches, competitions, products, charity events, and all the crazy goings on in the world of competitive bearding. There are events going on every weekend all across the country, and each event is a fundraising event for a local charity that needs help. I try to help promote the events and the local beard clubs in the area and highlight a local beardsman who has a large presence in the bearding community. My issue is this. When I go into the multiple podcasting apps I have on my iPhone and go to search to the search bar and simply type in the word beard in, my podcast doesn't even show up. It is a podcast all about beards, and I can't even get it to show up under that topic on my searches. I was wondering, when I am uploading my episodes to Libsyn, am I missing something that I should be doing that could make my podcast show up under proper searches? Is there a field I am missing? Is something with iTunes? And if so, how do I fix it? Is there something to fix? Or could it be that my podcast isn't established enough for it to register under the most obvious search under my topic? I have 18 episodes out currently, and my download numbers are what I assume is good. You have my permission to look at this information. What are your thoughts, fixes, or possible suggestions on how I can get to the right crowd with a search? Thanks. And this is from Scott, the Beardcaster.
And we should point out, Beardcaster is one word, Beardcaster.
Yes,
so it's Beardcaster. The Beardcaster. That's how his show's title was in iTunes. I replied back and I said, you do not have beard, quote, B-E-A-R-D, quote, on its own in your title. Hence, a search in iTunes for beard does not give your show any results. You're not anywhere in the search results. I mean, not that you're not in the beginning. You're not anywhere. I mean, I looked down and I sent him a screenshot. I'm like, you're not in here. In your Libsyn account, go to settings and change your title to the following. The Beardcaster, dash, it's all about the beard and the mustache and competitive bearding or something similar to that. And then click save. Wait 24 hours and search for beard again in iTunes. Attach his current search results for beard in iTunes. And then he said, hi, Rob. Thanks for your help. I changed what you suggested. Hope it helps me find my right audience. I also added more tags and keywords. Will that help too? Or does that field not really matter in searches? I love what you guys do at Libsyn and your podcast. You provide a mountain of information that I appreciate. Keep up the great work. And can I get a mailing address to send you some business cards and small flyers for my show? Thanks again, Scott. Per the latter question, yes, folks, just email me, rob@libsyn.com, and I'll send you my address. Now, Scott changed the title to The Beardcaster Dash, a beard podcast all about beards and mustaches and competitive bearding. And in less than 24 hours, he went from not in the search results for beard to number one in the search results. Remember, folks, search results in iTunes are about the title of your show, at least for iTunes and the podcast app. And some of the other apps, I went and looked, he showed up as well now at the top or in the top three or four. So,
yay!
Yes, that was a quick fix, and now he's happy. And his show, rightly so, is showing up. I mean, it's not like he's gaming the system. It's not like he put in similar to Zig Ziglar and Johnny Dumas and Tony Robbins.
No.
He wrote, you know, it's about beard. He put in a good description in his title of what his show is about. It's not gaming when you do it like that. It's just a few words. It's not spammy. And it represents what his show is about. And someone who goes into iTunes and is looking for something about bearding or competitive bearding will find his show now. And that Apple will not be upset with, because that actually helps iTunes users find what they're looking for. So again, he didn't do it spammy. He kept it short, concise, put in a few keywords that were right for his audience. And now when you search for those keywords, his show is either one or two on those different words that he put in there.
That's awesome. Exactly. And good. Yes. Congrats, dude.
Yes.
And that's a really cool podcast about bearding.
I love like niche awesome podcasts like that.
I know. It's fantastic. And so good for you. I'm glad that you found. And then, you know, maybe some of us don't have that. Like, there really aren't any keywords really for like this podcast other than Libsyn, because maybe somebody's looking for our podcast. And that would be really a key.
Awesome key would be thing. A keyword.
Awesome. Awesome podcast. I know. Libsyn. The
My son uses awesome for everything. Podcast. Sorry.
Oh my God. That's weird. All right. So you want to talk about some podcasting to YouTube stuff that you came into, huh?
Yeah. So this is something I had not thought about. And Wayne Henderson said this in a Facebook podcast community. I'll read it because I like Wayne. So here.
Okay.
And my voice is going to be – my voice is no – Wayne, I'm doing you a disservice quoting you here, because you have such an awesome voice. So please take my voice and make it 10 times more awesome, and then think of it as Wayne's. Quote, my great friends, Troy Heinrich – I can't even pronounce
– Heinrichs.
Ritz. Quote, my great friends, Troy Heinrichs and Aaron Peterson have had a deaf listener contact them, thanking them for the YouTube episode releases because of YouTube's built-in closed captioning transcription service. That is reason enough to release episodes to YouTube, in my opinion, unquote. Well, thanks, Wayne and Troy and Aaron, for pointing out the great reasons for publishing – a great reason for publishing to YouTube, which again, now, folks, if you are with Libsyn, takes less than 5 minutes to set up one time, and then going forward, all your episodes – get converted to video and uploaded automatically to YouTube, and you can even do your back catalog if you want to.
That's fantastic. La, la, la. That's a great project for you guys at the end of the year. If you decide you want to take a break from podcasting and maybe take a couple of weeks off or something like that for the holidays, it would be nice for you to sit down and do this. It'll be really fast, and you can get it done and start fresh for 2017. Yay. All right, next. Oh, sorry. Oh, this is for
no,
you.
Go ahead.
This is me, right?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Hello, Elsie and Rob. You had mentioned in episode 81 that we can add a We can add a widescreen image to our YouTube video from Libsyn. Unfortunately,
it's almost as if we transition from one topic to another that are related.
Okay. That are like pretty fantastic, Rob. You're so amazing and intuitive. And unfortunately,
it's awesome.
and awesome. That option does not display for me under destinations. When I go to edit my YouTube destination, is there an option I'm missing or not toggling? Thank you. And this is from Daniel.
Hi, Daniel, who, by the way, is from the Reasons I'm Broke podcast. And Daniel, FYI, I just received the new batch of business cards you sent out. So you're all set there. Thanks for sending those over. Per YouTube and widescreen artwork. Yeah, I guess I should have explained that better on the last episode where I mentioned it, where you upload said image. You upload the widescreen image for the show level under settings. So once you've set up the YouTube, there will now be another place to upload an image under settings, and it's right under where you currently upload your 1400 by 1400 image. So right below there is a place to upload a widescreen image. And when you're creating a post, there's also another place to upload widescreen image as well in the post. So, but for the show level, it's not under destination for YouTube. It's under settings overall, and there's a place there to upload the widescreen. And then once you do upload the new artwork, remember to click save.
Yes, that is always good because that we always forget.
People do that. Yeah, people will do that. They'll upload the image and it's great, and then they close the browser and never hit save.
All right, so are we ready for the Why Do You Hate Us segment? We got another. You guys are slacking. Y'all need to send us your one-star review recordings. You have to talk it. You have to talk it.
You're right. You got to go into iTunes, find a review of your show that hurts your feelings, or maybe not, but is one-star review, and record it. Read it to us and tell us how it made you feel.
Yeah.
We're here to help.
We are here to help. And, you know, we all have gone through this. It's good therapeutic. It's good therapy. So we've got some, this is from Justin Malik. And I believe he had sent us some, remember the audio feedback a couple episodes ago. So now we get to hear his bad review or his why somebody hated him.
Okay.
And last, I like the idea of sharing our bad reviews. So here's one from Optimal Living Daily. It's 2 stars, not 1, but hopefully that works for you. Not enough content to fluff ratio by Van Gogh! Quote, I love the content, exactly what I'm looking for, but the execution is irritating. The podcast is 50% louder than all my other content, so the initial startle when I'm listening on my headphones having to adjust the volume just for this podcast is 1 star down. Then it's the long, hyped-up intro. I have to forward through 90 seconds of junk for every 3 minutes of content. Because I listen in the car, or headphones while I work, fiddling with my phone while I listen is not an option, so this podcast, while a home run on content, is not worth it for me. Unquote. Now, when I first started the podcast, I did do some A-B testing and thought my volume sounded the same as other shows, and I just listened and compared it to the feed. I thought yours sounded louder than mine, actually, and I checked other shows too, but didn't find mine to be louder than them and actually heard ones that were much louder. If you guys want to listen and let me know what you think, Robin Elsie, I'll take it to heart for sure. But man, I didn't realize if you're at work with headphones that volume control was such a big deal. Crazy. And I didn't think my 1 minute intro was out of control, but hey, to each their own. At least they called the content a home run, so I'll take it. Thanks, guys.
Well, Justin, thank you for sending that in. And first, I know some people are not going to like when I say this, but better to be too loud than too quiet. People can turn down a podcast that is too loud, but one that is too quiet, if the listener, you know, can't hear it in their car, they may skip and go on and never listen. Key is to be consistent from episode to episode. Pick some settings, preferably loud, stick with it, and be consistent throughout the episode. I'm not going to talk about LUFS. Sorry, it's too deep a dive. There are some European regulations, and you have to be a certain LUFS level. Oh, I just talked about it. But anyway, you have to be at a certain level. And they're like, oh, we don't want people to hurt their ears. There's a volume button. They can turn it down. They can't turn it up to 11. So if you're too low, they can't hear your podcast. It's better to be too loud and have them use that little volume button to turn things down than not be loud enough. That's my opinion. Sorry.
That's all right. I'm cool with that. It's yeah, and I think that travels in really quickly. Just, let me just say this. I don't want to get into it. But it is good for you, and I'm sure most of you guys that are listening to the feed are kind of a different breed, so I might not be talking to the right audience. But I do suggest that you guys do listen to your own podcast, at least periodically here and there, like the whole thing during your everyday life, the way that you would actually listen to something. Maybe you're taking a walk. Maybe you're at the supermarket. Maybe you're at a coffee house. So all that stuff. Listen to it in your ears. Notice when you turn the volume up and notice when you turn it down. And that's really going to tell you, like, it's going to be a huge, brilliant thing that you're going to learn from doing that, because you'll go, wow, my levels are really off, or wow, that was really quiet, I didn't realize it, or wow, why is my intro so loud and my interview so quiet? I had no idea. So especially with the whole, there's a lot of people who are outsourcing audio production, and there are some people who are incredible, like John Buchanis, who is our editor for She Podcast, who is really a pro and he does incredible work. And then there's people who maybe there's a VA somewhere in a different country that you're saving some money on and have hired for, because that's your choice and you can do what you want. But maybe they're not very good at editing and they don't really get that. And I can hear, I mean, it's really frustrating. It's very frustrating for the listener. So just listen to your show a couple times so you know what other people are hearing in their ears.
Yeah. If you haven't sat in your car going down the highway at 70 miles an hour with your earbuds in your ears, listening to your podcast, well, you haven't consumed it like a lot of your audience has.
Exactly. No, and you're absolutely right. It's you must do that at least once a month to hear your own voice and stuff. So anyway, are we ready for let's see,
yes.
What are we doing?
Before we talk about stats, yeah,
okay.
I want to.
All right. Oh God.
I want to read this email from Elsie.
Oh, come on.
Yes, I'm going to do it.
No.
Hi, Rob. Not that I care about stats. I just happened to be in there and saw we had our first 1,000 download day. Yay for us. Denial is a sure sign of addiction.
Hey, I totally was not. I honestly just happened to be in there.
Just looking around. Okay.
Come on. But it was fun.
It's okay. It's okay to admit you're having a problem. It's first step to recovery. We have a lot of recovery podcasts out there, by the way.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Now to it's kind of the real intro before stats. You want to read this one from Christine?
Sure. Hi, Rob. I enjoyed the webinar you participated in recently and have incorporated some of the writing tips. I noticed from my destination's downloads, iHeartRadio makes up a very small percentage of my downloads so far this month compared to Libsyn Classical Feed. Is there anything I can do to boost number downloads, especially on iHeartRadio, since that has a huge audience? Regards, Christine.
She then included her stats. And per her iHeartRadio, which she was complaining about, it was only getting her a little over 5% of her audience. Christine, that is great. As you will see when we talk about user agents, FYI, for today in iOS, it's well below 1% for iHeartRadio. So I would say this, congratulations, you're doing very well. You're not going to have iHeartRadio be as big as your RSS feed overall. So, you know, again, congrats. And one big note on stats, everyone with advanced stats should now have destination stats turned on for their account. If you have not looked, go to stats, then go to traffic source, and then under show for overall numbers, or go into individual episode and then look for traffic source there under episode. This will tell you more than user agent information, assuming you have all your destinations set up, which of course you do, right? You guys have been listening to us over the last few years and you set those destinations up like I told you, and you are ready to go, and now you've got this great information. For those couple of people that hadn't listened to us, time to set up those on published destinations.
Yeah, it's the all easiest thing ever. And I know it's annoying, and I have to tell you, I'm that person. I'm the slacker. I am a slacker. I'd rather pay attention to the new stuff that are coming in.
Yeah, you'd sometimes rather play with stickers.
I know, I'd rather play with stickers, but you have this power, and I'm one of those slackers. It's like I had, you know, put off going inside of our own, my own Libsyn account to make some changes. It's super simple. And the thing is, it takes less than a minute. It takes less than a minute to set this stuff up. And I was like, ugh. So get off your butt and do it. It's the easiest thing ever. And then you don't have to go mess with it again. So yes, I agree. Okay, go. More stats.
I'll let you read this one.
Let's see. Hey, Rob. All my clients use Libsyn. But my personal podcast is still on another podcast host from way back when, before I knew what I was doing. Not sure if you know anything about this other host, but in their stats section, I have two main qualifiers labeled downloads and feed hits. Their support says that feed hits refer to whenever the feed itself is accessed. Downloads obviously refer to downloads. Do you know more about what feed hits could be? Should I even focus on that? Total downloads is, then he has these numbers. You want me to read them? 51,000.
Sure.
And
yeah,
then total feed hits is like 379,000 something. If you don't know, no problem. Just curious. Name redacted.
Yeah. Hello, so that's NR. That's why we can read the numbers, because nobody, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, NR, feed hits are an ego-boosting misguided stat. iTunes by default is set up to ping your feed every 6 hours, which is four times a day per device that you have. Some people even set it for once an hour. But if you go with the default, that is 28 pings a week to your feed per user versus one download if you have a weekly show. Your ratio is only 7.5:1, but still, it's much higher than downloads. Because people can have different ping frequency, and it only pings when the computer or a smart device is on, the RSS feed hits is completely worthless, and again, is only good for boosting one's ego with a bigger number than your downloads actually are. And it is the downloads that really matter. So ignore feed hits. Only look at the download number. That's where your audience is actually at. And the other one, again, there's no way to tell, because if some of your people are doing it four times a day and some are doing it 24 times a day and someone has it on a computer and the computer's always on and it's hitting all the time, and you don't know. You just, there's no way to know what feed hits relates to an audience unless you go through and then they filter and none of, but nobody does that. And again, feed hits, worthless, ego boosting, bad number, ignore it.
Bad number, ignore it. There you have it. So that's good. Sorry. Wah, wah.
All right. Now let's look at some user agent stats. And this is for downloads in the month of September. Mobile downloads for September were again at an all-time high and at an amazing 80.76% of all downloads in September going directly to mobile devices. I thought maybe it would be October or November we would break 80%, but nope, it was September. So we finally broke that 80% mark.
Whoa, that's crazy.
I know. I always thought 75% was where it was going to flatten out, but no, it's 80 and it's going up still. So who knows where if it's going to flatten out. Well, like eventually it has to flatten out because it'll hit 100%. But where it flattens out between 80 and 100, that'll be interesting. Computer downloads were, of course, at an all-time low at 19.04%, and set-top boxes held steady at 0.19%. Yep, set-top boxes are 19/100 of a single percent. But mobile devices are now more than 4 out of 5 doctors recommend this, or download requests. And that is nice to see and be able to say, and say over 80% of download requests come from a mobile device. The iOS to Android ratio rose for the first time in many months, and it's up to 3.2:1. That's up from 2.64:1 in August. This change in September, when you think about it, is actually not surprising, because iOS 10 and new iPhones were released in September, and all of that affected the numbers greatly. iOS was the major contributor to the mobile increase in September when I went back and dig through everything.
Can I interrupt you really quick before you continue? All right. So obviously being able to delete the podcast app in iOS 10 did not bear into this.
No, people aren't deleting the apps.
I know. But, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, because I've seen articles.
Here's the thing. People use default apps. And there was more people getting iPhones 7s and 7 pluses and new iPhones in September than other months. And iOS 10 came out, so people were updating from older versions and they were getting more active again with their device or their iPad or their iPhone. So whenever the 10, you know, there's a new major release, people get, again, excited about the device. And then there's also new devices and they're playing with the new devices. And when they get the new devices, there's only so many apps on there. And one of those apps happens to be the podcast app. And people use native apps. Very few people delete native apps. So to see this September spike, we've seen that every September for the last few years. We've seen that September spike because of new iOS rollouts. So it was nice to see it again. It'll be interesting to see what happens in October.
Sweet.
And yeah, let's we'll talk a little bit more about that because there's other factors affecting what happened in September that more than just positive news for iOS, there was negative news for an Android phone. OEM apps, and we'll talk about that right now. So OEM apps, those apps that are pre-installed on mobile devices by manufacturers not named Apple, they were at 7.49% for September. That's down from 8.15% in August. Samsung remains responsible for the biggest part of OEM apps. Last episode, I talked about these stats. I joked that Samsung was being on fire of late. Well, the Note 7 disaster combined with the iPhone 7, 7 Plus launch definitely combined to change stats for September. I would imagine we will see this change continue when I run the October numbers. I think all the bad press and stuff that happened with the Note 7 and the Hell's Gate Armageddon meltdown, banned on the planes, can't use Note 7s anywhere, that wasn't good for Sammy. And yeah, there was good news for iPhone. And again, so that just helped a perfect storm driving up iOS stuff this past month. And I think it's going to roll over until October. We'll find out next month. Mobile aggregator apps had another uptick. They were just a little down. So they were down. The overall numbers were up, but the percentage was down. And it was at 16.77 of all downloads versus 17.47 in August. The drop was more a factor, again, of Apple's podcast app jumping up in September. There was a big increase there. And the big dog, of course, in aggregator apps is still Apple with iTunes and the podcast app coming in at 57.36% of all downloads for August for September. That's up from 53.82% in August. So, again, Apple ecosystem uptick was all on the iOS side, by the way. So I say iTunes and the podcast app went from 53.82 to 57.36, but all of that increase, 100% of that increase was the iOS side. Per aggregator apps to consume at, number two for September stayed with Podcast Addict at a whopping 6.04%. I want to pause here on stats and do a little shout out to Podcast Addict that had this post on Twitter, quote, at Davey902, please try using Libsyn instead of SoundCloud as they are dedicated to podcasts and are doing great work, unquote.
Yay. Aww.
Thanks, you. Podcast Addict. Yes. We appreciate the Twitter love. And now back to stats.
Okay.
Number three, aggregator app was Stitcher at 3.26%. Moving up one spot to number four was Overcast at 2.18%, up from 1.94% where they were in August. And seems Apple's rising tide lifted Overcast as well. Maybe a lot of people came in, tried the podcast app and said, I want to try something else. And then number five was Shifty Jelly Pocket Cast. That dropped from number four, but they also had 2.18%. But there was just like a few thousands behind where Overcast was. So they're both actually the same percentage, but Overcast won on the total number. Then there was a big drop for the next group, which were all under 1%. So numbers 6, 7, 8, and 9 combined were 1.38%. Number 6 was Downcast. Number 7 was Player FM. Number 8 was Trove. And number 9 was Podcasts on Windows Phone. Then there's a huge drop from there, and then everything else combined less than 1%. Some of them in order are RSS Radio, Podkicker, Antennapod, Castro, Podcruncher, Instacast, and ExoPlayer. And of course, there's more that are really small. But again, Castro is moving up the list, Elsie. Your work is paying off. All that
I love Castro even promotion. More now. So nice. Right? I love it. Okay.
So in September, we continue to see mobile pickup percent. I mean, it's just what we've seen every month. And this time, the uptick was tied directly to Apple's September launches. And when you look at everything, though, it still comes back to the RSS feed. The feed remains the lifeblood of your podcast. Think about this. 57.4% from Apple, 16.8% from Ag apps, 3.3% from Stitcher, 7.5% from OEM apps, plus aggregator apps on the desktop. Add them all up. That's over 85% of all downloads, plays that are directly tied to your RSS feed. The RSS feed remains at the heart of every podcast, period. And that's not changing anytime soon. And actually, the RSS feed importance is increasing, not decreasing. That's the first time when those numbers combined to be over 85%. So despite what some bad articles out there say, RSS feed is really important. And Libsyn's goal, again, for our partner producers is simple. We want you to be able to say to your audience, quote, find my podcast anywhere you listen to audio except Pandora, unquote. Be everywhere. And that starts with your RSS feed.
Yay. So, all right.
All right. So where have we been? Have you been anywhere?
Yes, I have, actually, Rob. I put it like a little bit below, but I'm happy to talk about this right now. As my, I don't know if you hear my daughter singing very loud outside, but if that's okay, because it's really great, because it goes along with this. So I was in Detroit I'm in Detroit. I was hired to do this thing. I don't know if you can scroll. Maybe you can take a look at it and maybe listen to it later, Rob, because there's a little bit.
I actually listened to it already. I already
did you?
It.
Okay.
Yes, it was really cool. I know her.
Yeah, so I was, I did a voiceover job that was for a project in Detroit. It's called Decode Detroit, and you can find it over at decodedetroit.com. And you can actually attend. So if any of you guys are in Detroit proper, go to this thing. It is sort of like a live, I don't know how to describe it, like a live game. It's sort of like, do you remember those mystery mm-hmm. things that you could go to and have dinner and there was a mystery theater and you ate and you found out who killed
somebody? Is this one of where you're locked in a room and you got to kind of figure your way out?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So then you go in there but I play an AI. So I am artificial intelligence that speaks to you through obviously lots of computers. I'm not sure how it's set up, but those guys worked very, very hard. So they hired me to be the voice of the artificial intelligence. So I'm the one that's talking to you through the games. And so I had to record it in a bunch of different ways. Like I had to do like different outcomes, of course, different sort of reactions to people depending upon the action that they do inside the game and whatnot. And so generally speaking, at the end, you either release Minerva is her name. You either release Minerva into the internet and she's free, or you keep her locked up. So it's up to you to make the decision. And it was so fun, that project. Tom Mansell actually turned me on to it, who is a friend of mine, has become a friend of mine. And I've done his show as well. He does the Slumberland podcast. So he's like, there's this opportunity. Do you want to do it? And then I sort of send in an audition and they hired me and it was fun. So if you guys check it out, decodedetroit.com. And that was really fun. Yay.
Congrats.
Thanks.
All right.
And you, where have you been?
October 14th, I spoke at the Society of Adventist Communicators. I did a podcasting 101 session, 90 minutes, 88 slides. That was in Denver. I just did a quick day trip, fly out early in the morning, spoke at 2 p.m. for 90 minutes, and then flew back that night, answered some questions. So I stayed there, answered questions even afterwards for another 30 minutes. At the end of the presentation, I had a Q&A, and one of the questions was, and I kid you not, quote, I hear the RSS feed is going away. What can you say about that? Unquote.
Mm.
Well, if I was not at a religious conference and this was not a clean rated show, I could tell you what I think about that. But oh hint, first word starts with B, four letters. Second word starts with S, also four letters. If any of you saw the Gary Johnson video out there where he responds to a person asking him if voting for an indie candidate is like throwing away a vote, yeah, that's kind of how I reacted. I could not believe the question. That is the damage those crap articles out there are doing Anyway, someone seems to have slipped a soapbox here under my feet, so I'm going to get down off it before I go on too long. Yes, but yes, I was very surprised. But that just tells you that those bad articles are proliferating into mainstream space.
Misunderstanding. Mainstream misunderstanding.
Yes.
Media manipulation.
Yes. A myth I'm going to be addressing in one of our upcoming talks. My interview with Frank Moserino from the Starting With Nothing podcast is now live. I am on episode 173. We talk about tips for starting a podcast, especially for entrepreneurs, and how to use a podcast to build your brand in your niche. Link in the show notes for that interview. Thanks, Frank, for having me on. And I was also at Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership event on Wednesday, October 19th. It was here in Kansas City. Wow, Dave is an incredibly great speaker. I mean,
good.
Yeah, I mean, it was like watching a mice, you know, just a master up there on stage.
I'm sure.
And it was a great event. It was geared to entrepreneurs, lots of great advice. But just watching Dave on stage, I was just like, oh, wow, I got to steal that. I got to borrow that. Change. So if you've ever seen Dave live, you know what I mean. But, I mean, he really had a great stage presence and the way he moved and the way he talked and the body language and everything. It was just it was watching a true artiste, and I just really appreciated it. So, yeah, so it was fun. It was a great event. Yes. Here's what was really interesting. So there are all these people at this Entree Leadership thing. There was a few thousand people there. And I was talking to different people, and I kept saying, so how'd you hear about this? And Dave is on the radio. Not one person I asked about said they heard about it on the radio. They all said they heard about it on the podcast.
Nice. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Whoa. That's pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool.
That's your core audience, your podcast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So where are we going? In early November, both Dave Jackson and myself will be speaking at the DC Podfest. We want to see you there. You better be there. And it's Washington, DC, of course. I will be doing a myth-busting session, and I can't wait. I think I might have something in there about the death of RSS feed.
You need to write an article, Rob, that is called The Death of the RSS Feed. And just that's it. Because that's going to call people over and, you know, people misleading headlines and all that. Mm-hmm. People land on that all the time. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. So anyway, I hope to see you there. I'm going to have fun with that session. Dave's got a session. Both Dave and I look forward to seeing the folks there. And if you're in the DC area, definitely be there first weekend in November. I think it's actually Friday and Saturday in November. On Saturday, November 12th at 4 p.m. Central Time in Overland Park, Kansas, the KC Podcaster Meetup will be at The Grid. I will be doing a podcasting session. This will be a good one to go to. In October, I did a session called Marketing Your Podcast, Getting the Fame and Fame and Fortune. Very tongue-in-cheek for that title. And for November, the session will be titled Monetizing Your Podcast, Getting the Fortune in Fame and Fortune. And I'll be going over different ways to monetize and tricks for big and small shows if you want to try to make some money from your podcast and put some reality into it. Put that in your calendar. More info at meetup.com. And anyone in the KC area should be attending these meetups, right, folks? If you're listening in your Kansas City area, you're going to the sessions, right? I'm also going to be speaking at Training 2017 conference on February 1st in San Diego. I'll be doing a 3-hour clinic. Go to the bathroom beforehand. Podcasting 101, 201, 301. If you attend, you will be podcasting at the end of that clinic.
That's awesome. And
now, where are you going to be?
I am not. I have a couple of places that I am in the process of being, but not quite here. Yeah. I am going to Pittsburgh. So when you guys hear this, I'll be in Pittsburgh for a little bit. So. Well, that doesn't really affect you guys.
You'll be at PodFest in February.
I'll be at PodFest in February. That is right. So Podcast in February starts February 23rd through the 25th. And the She Podcast, there's a She Podcast all day event on Thursday, which is called Pod Fusion. You can find it over at shepodcast.com/podfusion. And it's really open up to everybody. So it's not just for She Podcasters, it's for He Podcasters as well and everything in between. And we're going to be actually breaking molds and getting your you out of the box, if you will, creating content. And it's going to be more of a skill building set, not necessarily you sitting and seeing a presentation. You're going to be immersed in creating some content in the process and sort of gaining a skill set to become better at what you are already doing and possibly doing things differently. So it's going to be super fun. You guys need to sign up like now. So yes. Yes. And then you are going over to Proclaim 2017.
Right. So I'll be at the Proclaim 2017 show the end of February into early March. That's also in Orlando. And this is the old National Religious Broadcaster Show. So look forward to seeing folks there. And then finally, we will be silver sponsor at Podcast Movement. That will be in August of 2017. As always, if you have an organization or event and need someone to speak about podcasting, just email me, rob@libsyn.com. We have a few people that can help you out on that front. And fabulous. I think that's it for
that
remind
it.
People where to send their email and voicemail. And
yes,
where to call.
You guys, where to call. So you can email over at thefeed@libsyn.com, thefeed@libsyn.com. Any kind of feedback, you can attach an audio file to that as well. We love that. And you can call us at 412-573-1934, 412-573-1934. You can see that number straight from your show notes. And if you have, you can also download our free apps for both iOS and Android. So if you go into either one of those app stores, you can search for Libsyn, The Feed, and you should find us. It's a free app, and it's got really easy ways for you to contact us through there. If you want to use SpeakPipe, you could do that as well, speakpipe.com/thefeed. And hey, if you want to create a Clamor from us, you could download the app from Clamor or use, actually you can go inside of the Libsyn, the blog.libsyn.com where I put the show notes, and on the player, you can very easily create a little Clamor from there.
All right.
That's it.
Folks, until the next time.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.